You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Back in May, I interviewed Amy Arland, a registered nurse who works in the ICU at Kaiser Fresno Medical Center. At the time, she was grieving the loss of one of her colleagues to COVID-19. It was an emotional conversation that touched many of our listeners. And now that ICU capacities in the Valley have reached the breaking point, I checked back in with Arland to see how she's holding up. This is what she had to say.
I was hoping this would be over after the second wave, and now I think we're well into a third wave that has turned into a tsunami. The fight has worn many of us down. I'm worn down. There has been so much death over the last 9 months now in our ICU, more so than I have had to witness in my 20-year career. And that has taken a toll that has left a scar. Of course, I'm going to continue to battle and fight against this virus. But I think that this has made a lot of us consider not staying in this career because of the psychological damage that has been done throughout this pandemic to the people working on the front lines.
Can you tell us what it's like in your ICU right now?
Very somber. Our mood, our morale has hit an all-time low. Even though this is the holidays, does not feel very cheerful. Our ICU is completely full. We know that we are out of beds. And I mean, nursing is just a career where you have to be adaptable and flexible. Things change all of the time, but things are now changing and happening at a pace that we just cannot sustain anymore. And we have more of our coworkers that are getting infected and getting sick during this holiday season. We as nurses have been shouting from the mountaintops for months for people to please stay home. If you have to go out, wear a mask, wash your hands, you know, really pay attention to spreading this disease. And there are so many asymptomatic carriers out there that just don't understand. Those people that are not sick and don't have symptoms are the ones that are out there spreading this even faster. It's been so hard fighting this battle on many fronts. Even my own family members who still do not listen to me. They do not listen to the science. You know, they call me a fear monger and tell me things like I'm washed in the blood of Christ, so I'm protected from this virus. Or I refuse to live in fear. I have, you know, rights and freedoms, and I just can't live the way that you do in isolation. My husband, my two children, and I have been in isolation since March 8th. And it has been rough, but we have found ways to adapt. And we do it because working in an intensive care unit with COVID patients every day, I don't want to potentially be the typhoid Mary that's out there spreading this in my community. So I do it to protect my own family, and I do it to protect my neighbors, my coworkers, and people that I don't even know. It's had a devastating toll. And honestly, it hurts my soul in a way that I can't even express. I feel like I've been betrayed by my own community with their behaviors.
You talked before, and that was quite early in the pandemic, about the incredible sacrifices you were making at home to keep your family safe. What is life like for you outside of work right now?
Pretty low key. Like I said, I really don't leave my house for any reason other than to go to work. I've left my house, actually, to be honest, exactly 2 times in 9 months for non-work related travel. And both times I felt like it was a betrayal to my profession, to my, you know, my own morals, but I had to do it for my own sanity because, you know, isolation is hard on everyone. I was diagnosed with PTSD in June after losing a coworker and after trying to fight on so many fronts and not wanting to be on the front lines of this disease. Lots of problems with feelings of betrayal. I have no trust and no faith anymore in the government agencies that were put into place to keep people like me safe. I've lost faith and trust in my employer to keep me safe as well. And I don't feel like the hero that everyone claims that we are. This is not how you treat your heroes. I know that a lot of people are facing a lot of isolation fatigue. I feel that as well. And I know that they want to be with their families for the holidays. I do too. But I still am begging the same thing I was begging 6 months ago. Please, for the love of your nurses, stay home, because we don't grow on trees and there are no more of us. We have used up all of our nursing resources. There are no more temporary nurses or travelers to be had. Now that the country is all surging simultaneously, we are out of resources. And the only way that we are going to make it through this is if people stay home and stay safe and wear a mask.
Something that I have heard people say when we're talking about hospital capacity is, oh, they'll make room. There'll be room for me.
Yes.
Can you explain that when we're talking about ICU beds, it's not just the physical bed, it's the staff that support the patient in that bed that defines it as an ICU bed. Tell us about that a bit.
Well, at the point that we're at right now, our hospital has declared this a disaster, internal and external. And what that means is we are out of space. So we may have to convert places like the conference rooms where the executives meet, you know, where they hold business meetings. We're going to have to convert that into a space where we can put people on gurneys, possibly looking at the cafeteria. They've already put out tents, you know, outside of every emergency room to try to what we call triage. And that is means measure how acutely ill you are and how infectious you are and try to separate people out. It means that we have to have discussions that are a lot more difficult inside the hospital for patients who are severely ill with multiple medical problems, and let them know we are at the point where we really can't help you anymore. Having to struggle for what happens. I'm also a crisis nurse in our hospital. So that means that sometimes I will walk throughout the entire hospital and look at all of the patients and try to find the ones who look like they're getting into trouble and becoming more unstable, and try to head those things off at the pass before they need an ICU bed, because we don't have any. And it makes it much more difficult to try to decide, you know, who gets an ICU level, not just the bed, but the staff as well. Like I said, you know, ICU nurses don't grow on trees. And I know that the governor recently talked about this 2 days of training and you can make anybody an ICU nurse. It takes years to have the experience and the knowledge and the critical thinking skills that you need to be able to operate independently and autonomously at that level. And when you use them all up, the only thing that we can do is take care of more patients. That's why we have ratios. It means that I, as an ICU nurse, can only divide all of my time and attention between two patients and keep them both alive. It is tried and true. It has been proven to save lives, and that's why we have safe ratios in place. Now that those ratios are being threatened, I could have to try to manage 2 or 3 or 4 ICU patients at the same time. And I mean, you do the simple math. I only have 8 hours in a shift. And if I have to try to manage 4 intensively sick, unstable patients, the chances of all of them dying are greatly increased, because I just cannot be in that many places at once. We are out of ancillary staff. And it's not just nurses and doctors. You have to realize we need respiratory therapists. We need housekeeping to help us keep up with the mountains of trash that get produced with all of the protective gear that we go through. We need what we call patient care technicians or nurses' aides. Once these patients end up in the ICU, they're no longer functioning. They can't get up and walk around and exercise. They're going to have tubes, you know, in every orifice. They're going to be flipped over on their bellies, and they're going to be paralyzed and sometimes in a coma, a medically induced coma. We have to have physical manpower and strength and people to assist us to lift and move and keep these patients' muscles from wasting while they're in these beds. It's the manpower is limited. It's not just one nurse for one patient. It's 15 employees working together to keep two patients alive. And when you don't have all of that staff anymore, unfortunately, we're going to continue to see the death toll climb.
How are things with PPE? Do you have what you need?
We do right now. I think it's because of the strong work that CNA has done to get legislation passed to make sure that hospitals have to keep a stockpile on hand. It's not a very big one, but it's a start. And that has helped us. But honestly, the threat is always there. I mean, you know, with a nationwide pandemic going on, the competition for resources really makes it hard. I had told you 6 months ago that we were struggling to work with local vendors to get, you know, hand sanitizer and bleach wipes and face shields and things like that that we needed. Those are always going to be a threat to run out. So we are very judicious. We're very careful with how much we try to go through. But again, the fear of shortages are always there. If our N95 masks run out, that's the special respirator mask that we have to use. What do we have as a backup? So right now we're scrambling to look for any supplies and any different kinds of alternatives out there that we can provide our staff with just in case we have another shortage.
When we spoke last time, you said that you just didn't know how much of this you could possibly endure. You and many nurses, that it was so exhausting, so taxing, that many were considering how long they could stay in the profession. I'm wondering, what has that thought process been like for you over the course of this pandemic?
The last few weeks have been especially hard. I've had several shifts where I thought that I had reached my breaking point, where I'd had enough, where I just couldn't do this anymore. My husband and I have talked about the possibility of what happens if, you know, I make a grave mistake and I get fired right now, because I'm telling you, the pressure that we're under, people expect nurses to be superhuman and perfect and robots, and we're not. And the more pressure we're under, the more the likelihood is that we could make a dangerous mistake. And that is truly terrifying for all of us right now, to think that we might make an error that would make something worse for a patient. Not only that, but we could lose our jobs in the middle of all of this. You know, it is happening. There are nurses who have had to face layoffs in some hospital systems. So the fear of not having employment, especially during the holidays, just adds to the stress. But there are several days when I just feel like I just cannot go on anymore. It's very difficult. I'm atheist, but I have a Christian friend of mine who says, you know, God only gives you as much as you can handle. And I keep telling her, at this point, I should be able to bench press a Buick.
Without a doubt.
I mean, I'm trying to keep my sense of humor here, but honestly, there's not much sense of humor left to be had.
And how are you taking care of yourself? How are you managing your mental health in particular?
Lots of therapists.
Yeah.
Mental health is important. And you know what? I've been very open about my struggle with this. Like I said, not only have I been diagnosed with PTSD during the summer, but I also have trouble with anxiety and panic disorder now. And it's really hard because
both of those things are as a result of this pandemic, just to be clear. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard when you're in a crisis situation and you feel something like a panic attack or an anxiety attack coming on because of just all of the stress and the fear and everything that's involved in what we do, and to try to control that and be able to work through that and still be able to help my patients, it's hard. Things that I do for myself, because I'm a night shift worker and I've been quote unquote vampire for about 20 years, vitamin D and sunlight are, I'm finding, very important during the winter. So I have a little sun lamp so that I can get a little bit of sun inside the house. I work on a lot of crafts, baking when I have a little bit of free time, which is not much these days. And I do a lot of these interviews so that I can share my story and try to reach some of the people in the public that maybe don't understand how serious this disease actually can be.
Well, I will give you another chance to do that before we wrap up. You know, we have Christmas and New Year's right around the corner. As you mentioned before, there's extreme fatigue related to social distancing and isolation. What do you have to say to our elected leaders and to the public at this critical moment?
Well, I'm going to take this opportunity to say what I got to say. I am absolutely ashamed of our local public leaders, especially people like our county sheriff, who has declared publicly that they are not going to enforce any of the protections that our government has tried to put in place, like social distancing, wearing of masks, staying at home. And especially now that we are in a stay-at-home order for my region, and there is no enforcement going on at all. So people are not listening. They're continuing to have their holiday parties. one of my local churches just had a Christmas caroling group out this past week. A very large group of children and adults that walked around my neighborhood Christmas caroling. And we know that singing, shouting, sneezing, coughing, things like that spread this airborne disease even farther. And many of these people were not wearing masks. I had that feeling of disgust in the pit of my stomach. I can't tell you all of the things that went through my head that I wanted to say and do in that moment. But I decided to take the high ground and stay in my house where it was safe and scream from my windows. But this is what I'm talking about. This is why we're going to continue to have to stay in a lockdown. And we're going to continue to see hundreds and thousands of more people in our community die because of this just blatant disregard for this health crisis that we are in. It is not about religion. It is not about politics. It is about the preservation of human life. And that is what I am about as a nurse. And I don't see people out there really caring about each other or the people around them anymore. This is about taking care of not just your loved ones, but your community by doing something as simple as following some rules. It was difficult when people first said, I don't want to wear a seatbelt, when seatbelts were made mandatory. But, you know, that was a rule that was put in place to keep people safe and alive. This is the same thing that we are doing with the masks and the social distancing and the stay-at-home orders. We're doing this to try to keep people alive. And I am tired of watching people die one right after the other in my ICU. And I know people say, well, it's a very small percentage. Well, it's the only percentage that I see every day.
It's such an unimaginable thing that you are experiencing right now. I don't have words to describe how grateful I am for you and for all of the healthcare professionals who are showing up in our time of need. And I wish you some peace at the end of this terrible journey. Amy Arland, thank you so much for sharing your story and for being with us today.
Thank you very much.